Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for listening to the show. I always say this evening, except you could be listening anytime, anywhere, which is really quite wonderful. So however you fit us into your week, I'm very glad to be part of your week and share all this cool stuff with you. And tonight's guest has an amazing story. My guest is Dr. Carl O. Helvey, who is probably the longest survivor of lung cancer, and he did it completely without surgery or medication, completely holistically. So we'll be talking to him in a minute. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And since tonight is the first day of spring, we have to whine about how unspring-like it actually is. I don't know about where you are, but I woke up this morning and opened the shades, and it was a steel gray sky, raining, sleeting, and windy. So we haven't quite gotten there. But every spring, there are two, I think they're by Ogden Nash, there are two poems that always come to mind, and I must share them with you. I don't know why I must share them with you, but I have to say these on the first day of spring every year. It's one of those traditions. And I must say it in my original dialect, which is Brooklynese. So the first one is, spwing, spwing, the boyd is on the wing. But that's absoid, the wing is on the boyd. And that's probably true right now. We have had birds, so, you know, there we go. That one does apply. But the other one is, spwing as spwung, the grasses riz, I wonder where the flowers is. And we don't have any grass and we don't have any flowers. And I don't know about where you are, but we're not even close to that level of spring here. So it's been quite a winter. I've been hibernating because it's been ridiculously cold and snowy and windy here for months now. So since I work from home, I have the luxury of looking at the forecast and say, oh, it's going to be warmer on whatever day it is, and go out and run my errands and buy food and do all of that stuff on the day when it's warm. And when it's awful out, I didn't have to go out that much. But for most people, it's been really something. And now we get to look forward to warmer weather and sunshine. Remember sunshine? Every once in a while, like, the sun comes out and I go, oh, what's that? Yeah, sunshine. Wonderful thing. Good for the soul, good for the body. So happy spring. Let's look forward to things warming up quickly and having a lovely spring and summer this year to make up for the incredibly bizarre winter that we've had. Although I must say, I was sharing with somebody else who was whining about getting snow this late in the winter or early in the spring. And I reminded them that just about 20 years ago now, we got a full nor'easter blizzard that dropped 6 or 8 inches of snow in the first week in May. And of course, the next day, the temperature went up to 70 degrees and it all melted off and everything turned to mud. But these things do happen in New England. So, and I'm sure a lot of you are sitting there bobbing your head up and down going, let me tell you the story about when it happened in your area. So the unpredictability of weather and our foibles in dealing with it. And I wish you all a wonderful spring, and I hope you're coming out of hibernation and feeling more energized and ready for things to be more expansive, because I'm certainly ready. So let's talk to our wonderful guest, Dr. Carl O. Helvey. Are you with us, Carl?
Yes, I am, David, and I'm happy to be with you. And I did want to say I heard something about snow for next week. Have you heard that?
Yeah, the prediction here is several inches of snow on Wednesday with high winds.
Ooh.
Which doesn't necessarily mean it'll happen, but that's the prediction at the moment.
Oh. Well, I'm in Virginia, and to have snow again here is just unheard of, because usually we get snow about every 5 years. And
yeah,
you
really got socked. A friend of mine moved to North Carolina partly for better weather, and it took everything I had not to contact her and go, better weather, huh? It's been crazy everywhere. You know, at least here, it's normal to have a real winter. It's been colder and more snow, and, you know, it's been a deeper winter than we've had in a long time, but we get winter. You don't get it down there. It was really
not very often, no. I come to upstate New York for Christmas every year, because I grew up upstate New York, and then I'm happy to leave, but it's nice to have some snow when I come up for Christmas.
Right.
You know, and then leave it and not see it again till the next year.
Well, yeah, let's just... We could keep telling weather stories, but I want to tell you, have you tell your story, because it's amazing. First of all, let's give people an idea of your background. You're a registered nurse and a nurse practitioner, right? And I know that you have a doctorate in public health and wellness, but you also have a couple of other master's degrees. In the field as well. So you're about as educated as somebody can get in the field of wellness and wellness education. And part of all of this is that how long ago now? It's what, 40 years ago that you were given your, as I always call it, the death sentence?
It'll be 40 years in July. Yeah, so when it's coming up on 40
years. You were diagnosed with lung cancer, and they told you you had 6 months to live, which is not an uncommon story.
Right.
And what's very different, the two things that are different is you not only said no to it, but you said no to the regular treatment and approached it with holistic methods. And you're one of the longest living cancer survivors around. Using that method. So, you know, start out, tell us, you know, how did you wind up that sick, but also how'd you get yourself out of it?
Well, I had a dream that told me to go for an x-ray, and I pay attention to my dreams because I believe that this is one way that God speaks with us if we listen. And so I had always paid attention to my dreams. So I went to my doctor, but this was at a time where you had to be referred for anything from your primary doctor, and he was sort of conservative, and I wasn't about to tell him I was there because I'd had a dream, so I just went and I told him I wanted an x-ray, and he said, do you have symptoms? And I said, no, and he said, well, why do you want one? And I said, I just want one. So I finally wore him down, and he sent me for an x-ray, and then he called and told me that they found a spot that hadn't been there 6 months previously, and would I come in for a biopsy? So I said, fine, I go, and I have my biopsy. And the next thing, here is the surgeon and my doctor telling me that they're going to do surgery followed by chemo. And I said, wait a minute. I said, I don't make snap decisions. I go home, I think about it, I pray about it, I make a rational decision. I said, I may or may not be back. And I said, they said, but you'll be dead in 6 months. I said, well, that's my responsibility to make that decision. I said, your responsibility is to tell me the pros and cons of surgery, the pros and cons of chemo, and my responsibility is to make the decision. They didn't like it at all, and it was very unusual for anyone to say that to a doctor 39 years ago, and especially a nurse, but I did. So I come home. Well, the doctor's sister, he didn't know we even knew each other, but she was very different from him, and she had worked a lot with cancer patients, and getting them to see an alternative doctor in the northern part of the state. And so she said to me, I'll work with you. She said, if you like. She said, I'll watch my dreams. I said, great. And she said, we'll compare notes. She said, would you like a psychic reading? I said, well, I've never had one, but I don't have anything to lose. So she said, well, I know someone in Florida I think is one of the best in the country. So she got me a reading, and he picked up the cancer and said to treat it naturally. And then her dreams, my dreams indicated that. And so she referred me to this doctor in Northern Virginia. He had worked for the National Cancer Institute, but was having so much success that they closed him down. And so he continued in his office. And so I went to his office, but he asked me to sign papers that I wouldn't report him, and which I wouldn't have anyhow. And so he told me to take Laetril, which was illegal, but he told me where I could get it in Baltimore, Maryland. So every month I used to send up and get all my things in Baltimore, and I took Laetril, I took pancreatic enzymes, I took a zinc, which carries the Laetril to the cancer cells. Mm-hmm. I took pancreatic enzymes, which are very important to soften the cancer cells so that the Laetril can get to the cells. I took high-dose vitamin A, and by high-dose, I mean I started at 300,000 units a day for the first week, and the recommended is 5,000 international units. And so I took the second week, I took 200,000, and then I took 100,000 the third week, and then I went to 50,000, and I stayed there for a year. And I said to him, well, you know, I said, isn't that kind of toxic? And he said, oh, he said, I'll give you high-dose vitamin E. That will help take care of the toxicity. I said, right. But E is another fat-soluble that's stored in the fat. And he said, that's fine. And so I took the high-dose vitamin E. I took all kinds of Bs. I took bromelain. I took some digestive aids. He put me on a diet that was very much like a vegan diet today. It mm-hmm. was 75%. Raw fruit and vegetables with some additional cooked. I could have nuts. I could have grains. I couldn't have peanuts because they're a high source of protein. I couldn't have protein. And the reasoning was that the protein uses a lot of the enzymes in the body, and they wanted the enzymes free to work with the supplements and the Laetril and all. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have, of course, simple carbohydrates like cakes, pies, candy, ice cream. I could have fruit, but that's debatable with some of the cancer doctors. Some of them think you shouldn't even have fruit, but I did. And then my doctor gave me just the physical. And so being a nurse and being more holistically oriented, especially from my public health background, I decided I needed to add prayer, meditation, visualization, affirmations, a variety of mental, spiritual. And so I did all of this, and I went back. The holistic doctor the alternative doctor didn't ask me to come back. And so I went back to my primary doctor every 6 months. But I didn't tell him I was doing anything, so he thought we were in a wait-and-see mode. And so he was shocked when 2 years later it was gone. And right. He said, well, I guess I made the wrong diagnosis. Well, I had a friend when I taught at Duke. He was professor of pediatrics, and at this point, he's the medical director for Blue Cross Blue Shield for North Carolina. And he said, well, I want to see the lab work, the x-rays, the biopsy. I want to see everything. And so I collected it all, and I drove to North Carolina, and he reviewed everything, and he suggests it definitely was lung cancer. Mm-hmm. So I had verification. Now, the doctor that told me the physical things to take, I think was so progressive because everything he told me is pretty much scientific knowledge now as far as alternative treatments. But unfortunately, within 5 years after I was over the cancer, the Virginia Board of Medicine took his license, and so I don't know whatever happened to him. I felt real bad because all he was doing was trying to save lives, but this happens so often with the doctors that, you know, are successful with the alternative natural treatments.
Right. And people go to other parts of the world to get those treatments, not because there's something special about the doctors there necessarily. And, you know, it may be something that has to do with the history of the place and how they practice medicine, but often it's not. It's just that they're allowed to do it. So people go to Asia, people go to South America, and to get very similar kinds of approaches.
Right.
I know somebody who's working, I won't even tell a whole lot about it, but it is working on an amazing treatment, which is still experimental and off-label. And he's not a physician. And came up with this basically chemistry. And, you know, there are people being treated, but it's all very, very quiet.
Right, right.
And there are a few doctors who are legitimately experimenting with it and getting good results, but it takes a long time for it to be accepted for any kind of use. So this is an ongoing problem. So fantastic that you, as often happens, you had the right person whisper in your ear and say, go here.
Right, right.
And you found,
well,
found
I
the
think
right
if
person.
You're on a spiritual path, that people appear that would not appear in your life otherwise.
Right.
You know, because I have found over and over again, and I'll tell you an example just recently of something that happened to me that, you know, it's almost like a miracle. But these happen all the time to me, and I think it's because I have such a strong faith in God. But what happened more recently was before Christmas, I felt funny, and I put my hand up to my temple, and my pulse was going beep, 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 and it was all irregular and fast. And so I thought, well, I don't know what this is, because there's no history of heart in my family, or I've never had anything like it before or anything else. But I was a little frightened by it, but I tried to get things in order as good as I could before I went to bed. And I prayed, and I said, God, I said, if you're ready for me, I'm ready to come. And if I'm here in the morning and I'm back to normal, then I will know that you have more work for me. And so in the morning, my pulse was normal. But then this happened about a week later, and then I went to the hospital, and they tell me I've got atrial fibrillation, and, you know, I need to go on all of this drugs, which I never go on. And the doctor tells me, well, it's not a matter of dying. It's a matter of you could end up with a stroke, et cetera, et cetera. And I finally said, well, I'll take your medicine if, I said, you agree to help me get off it when I find out what caused this and what is underlying this. Because I said, all you're doing is treating symptoms. That's what doctors do. They only treat symptoms. They don't get at the underlying cause. And he said, fine, he'd work with me. Well, a friend had referred me to a medical intuitive. And I talked to them twice, but he didn't, you know, say anything. And then finally, I said to him, I said, what is causing this? And he said two things. He said, your blood is too thick, and it's creating stress. But also, you have mold in your system. And it is, you need to get rid of that. And he said, take colloidal silver. I'd never heard of colloidal silver. Have you?
It's actually part of the treatment I was alluding to. But yes, colloidal minerals, not just silver, are used for a lot of different things.
Oh, well, you know, the end of the story was, he said, take a half teaspoon twice a day for 5 days. I thought, well, I'm going to take it 6 days. So I took it for 6 days. I thought, I need all the little help I can get right now. And so I took it. But the first one, the first half teaspoon I took, oh, I felt wonderful. And, you know, my stomach had been really upset for a while, but my stomach cleared all up. And by the end of the 6 days, that's been a month and a half, I've never had another problem. It resolved. And I'd been in the hospital 3 times with it, and I've had it several times at home before I used the colloidal silver. But now I also know, I can tell when my blood is getting thicker, because for some reason it makes my pulse go up, it makes my blood pressure go up, and then I have something, I call it a startle reflex. I don't know if that's what it is or not. But I'm very sensitive to noise, even low noise. And then I know if I take some natural blood thinners to add to the blood thinners it gave me, that's going to straighten out. And so that's what I've been doing. And so I'm seeing the doctor now in about a week and a half, and I'm going to tell him I just want to go off this stuff now and get back to doing what I was doing before, because I've had to stop some of my supplements that I take as preventive that are very important, like my multivitamins,
right?
You know, that are right. Contradictory with the...
Yeah, I had a similar silliness that went on when I had a hip replacement surgery, and the surgeon said, you know, you can't take all of these oil-based vitamins because they're blood thinners, and don't take some of these other things. And they were giving me standard painkillers and whatnot. And I got through all of that and went for the follow-up. And he said, well, I want you on an aspirin as a blood thinner, and I want you to, you know, a couple of things. I said, wait a minute. You told me to get off the vitamins because they were doing the things you're now giving me medications for. I'm back on the vitamins. Why do I need to take that? And he was like, oh, right. Never mind. But, you know, if you don't understand, if you don't educate yourself and understand.
Right. Definitely.
The stuff that's going on, and listen carefully to what your doctor is saying and ask questions so you can find out why they're making the specific recommendations they're making, you don't catch it.
Right,
and
right.
Part of your story is how sensitive you've become in reading the signs and symptoms in your own body so that you can stay ahead of things and make the modifications, which are not major modifications in the greater scheme of things.
Right.
But you're doing them at the right time because you're listening to your body, and gives you an opportunity
to...
The
spiritual path is, you know, getting back to just that piece. I think that had I not been on the spiritual path, I probably might not be meeting people like... It's amazing over the years... People always appear when I need someone. I mean, it's like making life easy. It's not just with health things, but if my car, you know, the battery went dead one time and someone came running over to me, I'd been to an estate sale and this man come running and asked me if I needed help and got me started. I mean, it just seems like that there's always someone there to help me. And I think it's because I'm on the spiritual path and, you know, God is trying to make things as easy as possible for me. Maybe it's just some good karma coming back or something. I have no idea. But it just seems like when you're on the path that things are so much easier than they are when you're not on that path.
Oh, absolutely. And we will continue with all our wonderful stories in a couple of minutes, but we're going to take a short break. My guest is Dr. Carlo Helvey, who has an amazing story of saving his own life. and we'll talk more about how to live quite healthy into old age using holistic methods when we come back. Your website is beatlungcancer.net, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And people can get information about your books and about your story and all of that at beatlungcancer.net. We'll be back in a little bit, or as I always say, we'll be back shortly unless we get taller, here on the Farkas Files. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty, it's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
How do you wake up the entire African-American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems? Share your story.
4 years ago, I went through something that was very difficult for me. I was faced with a very big challenge at a young age. I didn't want to tell my parents. I really didn't want to tell anybody, and I didn't. I shut down. And that's not a burden that any young person should have to carry at all. Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off. If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
This is Terry Williams, co-founder of the Stay Strong Foundation. It's time for us to wake up, stand up, and speak up. Together we can do this. Search online for stories that heal. We must share ourselves. Healing starts with us. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
Later, much later, we heard something. We didn't breathe for listening. Then footsteps on the back porch, creeping, then more confident. After all, nobody was home. A hand closed on the knob on the screen door to the kitchen and found it latched. We heard a little sawing sound as a file began to slice through the screen wire. Grandma reached down for something in her sewing basket. Through the darkness, I managed to notice Grandma's rocker was rocking and she wasn't in it. She was standing over me. "Keep just behind me," she whispered. I followed her across the room into the kitchen. Now we were by the door and I heard the scuffle of heavy feet in there on the crinkly linoleum. Grandma turned back to me. Under my nose, she struck a wooden match with her thumbnail. She touched the match to something in her other hand. It sizzled. Then she leaned down and rolled it into the invisible kitchen. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book A Long Way from Chicago by Richard Peck. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Dr. Carl O. Helvey, whose doctorate is in public health and wellness, and he's a nurse practitioner and has been in practice for how long, Carl?
60 years.
60 years, like forever. And you've also been an educator in nursing education.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you do that?
That was a long time. I started teaching in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
So however many years that is. 40-some.
And just tell the audience so they have an idea. How old are you now?
81.
81. Nobody would suspect that other than the people who are running the numbers in their head.
Well, today I was having lunch and the waiter stopped and was talking with me, and we were talking about his age because he looked like a child. And I said to him, just, you know, out of curiosity, I said, well, how old do you think I am? And he looked at me, and he looked at me, and he looked at me, and he said, 56.
Don't you love it?
People used to guess around 55 to 60 as my age. And that's people that don't know how busy I keep all the time. These are just people that, you know, see me and look and see, you know, I don't have any wrinkles or anything. And so they just figure, you know, you're younger. But again, I think wrinkles are just something that you don't have to have. And you don't have to have all of that other. If you stay out of the sun and you don't frown and you don't use soap that dries out your skin, and there's a lot of things that people can do. You eat properly. And there's things.
Well, I think it's probably a whole lot more than that, because you're very conscious for decades now about how you live, how you eat, all the things you're doing. So why don't you give us an idea of these basically lifestyle recommendations that you put together in the book, and the book was published in 2007, so you probably added some more things to the list. But what's your basic approach to all this?
Well, I think nutrition is a very important aspect, and these days I believe that one should eat organic food, and the reason being that our food supply is so polluted with growth hormones, with pesticides, and mainly with genetically modified organisms. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a shame that people cannot have labeling so that they know what they're getting in their food. And the research even years ago showed very bad effects of the genetically modified organisms. So I think first people need to either try to eat organic or locally grown if they know the farming practices of the person that they're buying the food from. I think second is the water. People should not be drinking tap water that has all the chemicals in it, which are not good for you. Toothpaste has fluoride in it, which is not good for you. Drugs, I think that people should avoid drugs as much as possible. And I find that thus far, I pretty much found something pretty natural to deal with anything, that minor things that come up in my life, like when I had diverticulitis and the doctor gave me a prescription for steroids. I threw it away. I got a bottle of aloe vera, which is from the aloe plant. Mm-hmm. And I drank that morning and night, and in 3 days, the pain had stopped. And so the doctor told me I'd never eat berries again, and I'd never eat nuts again, and I eat 4 pounds of nuts every week, and I eat berries on my cereal every morning. And when I had my colonoscopy done a couple of years ago, the doctor said to me, you know, you've got diverticulosis, and I said, yes, I know. It doesn't bother me, and I don't bother it. I've never had another episode in 20-some years. So I think, and I mentioned the colloidal silver that I used. So a lot of times if I get something in my GI tract, aloe vera is one of the most wonderful things. You know, if my hemorrhoids act up, I drink a little aloe vera. If my stomach is upset about something, I drink aloe vera. It's wonderful, but, you know, there's natural things for pretty much everything. It's just a matter of trying to figure out what is the best natural thing. And, you know, I'm learning who the best people are in the alternative field, so then I'll look them up on the internet and find out what I should be taking. And so, that's important. I think exercise, more and more and more, the research shows that exercise even is a lack of exercise is a risk factor for even cancer. You know, so I think that's very important. People should avoid.
One of the new taglines is that sitting is the new smoking.
Right, right. Right.
Lack of exercise and sitting all day is has the same statistical effect on health outcomes as smoking did back in the day.
Right. I think that people should avoid, and what was it? I was starting to process foods. Avoid a lot of fat. I think people should also avoid sugar. I think sugar is probably worse than fat in a lot of ways. I mean, simple sugar, like the cakes, pies, ice cream, candy, all of that, you know, because that's implicated in heart, in diabetes, in obesity, in so many things. I think that people's attitudes are very important, and there's more and more books coming out about how you can create your future with your thoughts and your actions, and your attitudes are an important aspect of that. And, you know, there was a period in my life where when I drove, I get very anxious because I always want to get to wherever I'm going when I'm on the road. And I wasn't very nice, and I used to get maybe two or three fingers every time I drive somewhere. That hasn't happened for years because I started, you know, trying to do something about my impatience once I got on the road and trying to bless people and trying to send them good thoughts and trying to change my attitude and all. But I think that is so important that we have a positive attitude so that we attract positive things in our life. I think another thing that's very important in a healthy life into old age is to try to serve others, to do everything you can to help someone else. You know, if it's a smile or a little card you send to someone or dropping in on a neighbor that is ill or just trying to, you know, make the world a little bit better place for the people that are in it. Now, I hear from probably 60 cancer patients every month, and they always write me and they say, the doctor told me I had 3 months to live, and I write back and I say, that's not a medical diagnosis. Only God knows when you're going to die. So that's a God diagnosis. And so, and then I proceed to, you know, try to give them my story to try to encourage them and, you know, to find out what they want, if they want to go to a clinic somewhere or that I can refer them to, or, you know, how can I help them? And I get a lot of, I think this helps me a lot to help other people. And I believe that, you know, this is partly why I came through the cancer experience, so that I could help other people and could encourage them. But I think it's so important that we try to make the world a better place for everyone that's in it.
Well, you know, all of those things are critical to just feeling good every day, in addition to how it affects your physical health. As you were telling your story, I was thinking of somebody I met years ago when I was involved in a nutrition company. And she was an extreme runner. She would do ultra marathons. And she got pregnant, and she kept saying all through the pregnancy, there's something wrong in my body. And they were saying, you know, you're like a high-strung racehorse. You've never been pregnant before. That you don't have any idea. And she had the child, and immediately her immune system crashed. And she wound up in an isolation tent somewhere in a hospital with basically the equivalent of AIDS. Her immune system had completely crashed. And the doctors did all the things that doctors do, and they got very solemn, and the whole team came in and gave her, you know, the death sentence. There's nothing we can do. They always say, go put your life in order. And she got pissed. She just got livid, threw them out of the room. She said, what you're telling me is you don't have an answer. I'm not going to die. I just had a baby. get the hell out of here. I'll find somebody that has an answer for me. And somebody referred her to a nutritionist whose science was the core of this nutrition mm-hmm. company, who did very specialized testing to find out what had gone wrong
mm-hmm.
and prescribed very specific nutritional interventions. And it's been at least 25 years now since I met her, and she's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Similar story. You know, it's like if they tell you you're going to die, what they're basically saying is, if you behave the way everybody else that we treat behaves, which is you're going to do nothing except the toxic things that we're going to tell you to do, then based on our experience, you're going to die. And there are other things you can do. And if you do those other things, you get different outcomes. But I think the biggest thing is what you did and what she did, which is not accepting the death sentence. Like, no, I don't think so. That's your opinion. Let's
go
talk to
somebody. I wonder how
else.
Many people in the situation that I was in with the atrial fibrillation continues taking these drugs for the rest of their life and are debilitated.
Right.
Or I had another experience where I injured my back about 20 years ago, and I did the physical therapy and all that stuff. And when I got finished, I still had pain in my back. And she said, oh, well, you've got arthritis. She said, you'll have that the rest of your life. I said, look, I didn't have this 6 months ago. I'm not going to keep this. I'm not going to have this 6 months from now. I said, why should I have arthritis? I hurt my back. That doesn't have anything to do with arthritis. So then again, as I said, people always come in my life solve the problem. And so three people told me about chiropractors. I'd never been to one. The third person was a close friend, and he said, you need to go to a chiropractor. And he said, here's the chiropractor you need to go to. And I don't know if you're familiar with Edgar Cayce, but the chiropractor was one of the therapists at Edgar Cayce's Institute in Virginia Beach.
Yep.
And he was a massage therapist. He had worked with an osteopath. He was a chiropractor. And this guy, I'm sure he was very intuitive, because he always seemed to know exactly where to go on my body.
Right.
And, I mean, I was with him for maybe 3-4 months, cleared up with the problem, and that was 20 years ago. I've never had a problem since. So, again, I thought at the time, well, I wonder how many people accepted what this physical therapist said and say, oh, I've got arthritis, I can't do this, I can't do that, and end up debilitated the rest of their lives, too. So, as you say, you have to take your life in your own hands sometime and do what is right and not, you know, fall into that debilitating situation.
Right. And look around for the alternatives. You know, for me, I have maintenance things that I do. I go to an acupuncturist a couple of times a month. And the chiropractor that I do does what's called applied kinesiology, which is using responses from the body to diagnose all kinds of things, not just chiropractic issues, but nutritional issues and neurological issues, all kinds of things, which can then be adjusted for correction. And, you know, it's been amazing for. So, you know, once a year I go to the surgeon, and he always says, well, if the other hip hurts enough, I'm happy to replace that one, too. I'm like, oh, hell no.
Well, have you heard of prolotherapy?
Of what therapy?
Prolotherapy. P-R-O-L-O.
No, that's what I haven't heard of.
I interviewed Ross Hauser a few years back. He is one of the main people in prolotherapy, but what they do is, instead of replacements like hip or knee replacement or any of that, they inject a natural substance. I don't know what it is. I don't remember. It was a natural substance into the, like, say it's the knee, and they do that once a month for 3 or 4 months, and the ligaments and everything regenerate, and the people that they treat do not have to have replacements. And he told me, I said to him, well, how long does this last? And he said, the rest of your life. So it's worth investigating.
Well, while we were talking through the wonders of the internet, I just looked it up in Wikipedia, so I will yes. definitely be looking at it. Because so the most of the issues for me as I'm aging are joint issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of things that have to do with inflammation to keep everything calmed down so it doesn't hurt. But there's certainly something else going on there. So I will definitely yeah. look into this. Good. Thank you so much for that lead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try to, interview different people that have a different perspective on things. And, mm-hmm. and then, I'm able to use that information periodically. One of them that I interviewed does a lot of things in with the eye. He's an eye doctor, but he does all alternative. And my eye doctor has been after me for 7 years to do cataract surgery, and I don't want cataract surgery. And so I keep using my herbs. Now, my eyes have gotten a little worse since I've been on the beta blocker and the blood thinner, and so I'm anxious to get off so I can get back to my multivitamins and some of the things that I was taking, that the herbs to help my eyes. Some of them I've been able to continue, but some of them I had to stop. But as long as I take my herbs and all, I passed my driver's test to drive
right.
night and
right.
all, and so as long as I can continue taking my herbs, my vision stays fine.
There are some. Are you familiar with homeopathy?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And homeopathic remedies? I figured you were. There are several remedies for specific eye issues.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to investigate.
Yeah.
That.
So a couple of people have mentioned to me along the way, because they know I'm not going to take meds unless it's life threatening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then only for a short period of time. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are homeopathic remedies for specific to various kinds of eye issues.
Oh.
So check
now,
that
I did
out.
Use the homeopathic. I had Bell's palsy. I went to, I was teaching at the time, and I went to the university, and one of the nurse practitioners looked at me, and she said, "Do you feel all right?" And I said, "Yeah, I feel fine. Why?" She said, "Well, let me check your hand." She said, "Give me your hand." She checked. She said, mm-hmm. "Well, you haven't had a stroke." She said, "You got Bell's palsy." I said, "What's that?"
Right.
And so she said, "Well, you better see your doctor." She said, "They'll put you on steroids." So I went to the doctor, and he said, "Yeah, it's Bell's palsy, and here's a prescription." And well, on the way home, I ran into another faculty member that I knew, and she said, "Well, I just came from a conference, and they talked about the homeopathic solutions for Bell's palsy." And
gotta
so
love days
I
like
went,
that.
Huh? I went and I got the stuff, and I took it, and in, I think it was less than 2 weeks, it was all cleared up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing, but I love how people show up for you in those synchronistic ways at just the right time.
Doctors don't make a lot of money.
Same thing happens for me.
Yeah, isn't it great? The drug companies don't make much money for me either, do they?
No. My annual physical is pretty funny. He'll say, "Well, this is still the way it always was." And I said, "And I'm not going to take the meds that you're supposed to recommend." He said, "Yeah, I know that."
Well, at least he knows you, right?
Yeah, he's got more wiggle room than most straight physicians.
Yeah.
He's not particularly holistic,
yeah.
But he's willing to incorporate alternatives, and he doesn't fight with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if I say I'm going in this direction or I want to do it this way, he'll figure out why.
Yeah.
Which is really wonderful to work with. He's a great guy.
Oh, good. Yeah, I've just switched with mine because the one I had was, he told me about 3 years ago that I could only come once a year because Obamacare didn't allow it. And that was before Obamacare had even become law. And so I started going to the emergency whenever I had, you know, a problem come up. Because the group I was with, they had, well, it was urgent care was part of the whole thing. But instead of going to the doctor, I'd go to urgent care. But I decided, well, that's crazy. Why should I sit the whole day in urgent care for a minor problem that the doctor could have handled? So I've switched and have a new doctor. And she's
my it'll all settle out as things, as people figure out what Obama, you know, first of all, there is no Obamacare. It's a set of regulations on the insurance industry. It's not like there's insurance that, that you get from the government. But yeah, it'll be crazy for a while, and then they'll figure it out, and the BS that's being thrown around will eventually dissipate.
Definitely. Yeah. And so, I'm glad that it went through because, you know, I've seen so many people. I worked with the homeless, and I had a grant for almost $1 million to provide primary care. And I'd see these people come in with all of these, you know, health issues, and they weren't eligible for any care. Some of them had never had care before. And I had a wonderful nurse practitioner, and she and I, between us, we would, you know, get physicians that would donate, you know, like every 10th patient or something, they would do a free one. And so we would be able to get, you know, surgery and orthopedic care and some of the things that the practitioner couldn't handle on her own. But there were just so many people out there that just were not eligible for care. And it was sad because in a country that's supposed to have the standard of living that we have, and then to see all of these people that aren't eligible for care was just, to me,
That's crazy. Well, Carl, thank you so much for being my guest. We're running out of time.
Oh, it went fast, David.
And just a wonderful conversation and so much information. I encourage people to find Carl at beatlungcancer.net. Find his books, find his other materials, and you have a radio show as well.
Yes.
And that information is on the website?
It's on another website. It's holistichealthshow.com.
Holistichealthshow.com. Fantastic. Again, Dr. Carlo Helvey, thank you so much for being with us. What a wonderful conversation. I'm so glad to meet you.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it very much.
And another wonderful session of the Farkas Files. I love doing this show. If you got curious about who David is and what in the world I do, go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including a scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of what's going on with you, whether it's a person, a property situation, and, you know, take a look at what's happening and see how I might be helpful. So please take advantage of that. Take a look at things. If you're looking for back episodes of the Farkas Files, you can find that cleverly hiding at thefarkasfiles.com. You can also search on iTunes podcasts. And this show will be available within the hour on thefarkasfiles.com. I got to tell you guys, I love doing this show, partly because I meet incredible people and learn wonderful things, but also because of the feedback that I get from all of you at various odd times. Someone on Facebook or somewhere else will say, I've been listening to your show and it makes a difference. And that's very exciting. It's, you know, we sit here, you know, as the joke goes, you're sitting in front of your computer in your underwear and with a headset on and do the show. But out there, there are lots and lots of people listening, and I just find that so exciting. I'm so glad to be part of your life. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a wonderful week. Happy spring.